Justices, opposing counsel, may it please the court. I am appearing before the court on behalf of Mr. Ponce Perez, who appeals the sole issue of whether or not he should have had the safety valve under the guidelines applied to him. In truth, I have not found one case, although there may be some, that holds that the trial court was in error and should have applied the safety valve. In this particular case, we had a fairly unique situation. I feel I have reasonably good facts to present to the court. The government opposed the safety valve initially for two reasons. I feel that they felt convinced that my client was a leader or manager. The district, when the district court found that he was not, then we went on for a hearing whether or not my client had given a complete and truthful statement to the government. It's our belief that having taken the position that my client was a manager or a leader, he was put in a position where he could not possibly have given a full and complete statement by the government standards.
So what specific information did he provide?
In his interview, and that was the thrust of what I tried to present before the trial court, he testified he had come into the country a few months before he was arrested. He had
this
worked.
Is that interview where he doesn't give any specifics, names or anything, addresses,
yes,
places,
ma'am.
Right?
That, and certainly, I know the court is well aware that my client had no useful information, which he may have. He talked to the interviewing officers about certain places he could identify by his limited knowledge of the Phoenix area where he met the actual people who were in charge of the operation. And the response was essentially, you should have told us this when you were arrested. And quite frankly, maybe he should have, but this individual is not the it is, in my view, another individual that the cartel gets when they sense there's potential problems. He was an expendable newbie and sent into the fray and was arrested accordingly, in my view. In any event, I provide.
Well, you do agree that an interpretation the district court could, or an inference the district court could make, was that since it was an $80,000 deal, that was inconsistent with him being a first-time player.
Well, this morning, Aaron, I was describing to my wife what I'd be arguing about, and she's the educated lawyer of the two of us. And I had difficulty, but I thought back to my career, and maybe 2 years out of law school, I was assigned at the City of Rockford City Hall Legal Department a sex discrimination case, which at the time had the potential for a $120,000 verdict. I was told by my boss to handle it myself. So this man, in my view, was on a very short leash. He made the original arrangement with, he told at his interview, with two people at his side. He drove up not by himself but with someone else. He was not the transporter of the drugs, and we learned later that the co-defendant's original statement also was false, and that he had made at least four other deliveries for the individual in question. So, yes, I can. I can understand the trial court attempting to give a justification to the government for not granting the safety valve, but I don't believe it's logical to not to say that because the amount was so big, it wasn't a training exercise of some kind for a new piece of property in the organization. It's been my belief and experience that the drug cartel is much more sophisticated than at least I've seen in my practice has been that they've been treated or attacked, and this to me is just one exercise of their way of doing business.
That it? Okay. Well, thank you. Now, Ms. Murphy?
Thank you, Governor. May it please the court, opposing counsel. Good morning. I'm Madeline Murphy, and I'm asking this court to affirm the district court's sentence of 120 months, the mandatory minimum for Ponce Perez, and its decision to find Ponce Perez ineligible for the safety valve reduction. It's clear from the record that the district court simply did not believe Ponce Perez when he testified during the sentencing hearing, though it appears that Mr. Ponce Perez attempted to portray himself as an inexperienced individual. It's clear from what he told the court that he simply was not credible. On the one hand, he admitted that he was sent out to negotiate an $80,000 narcotics transaction involving two different types of narcotics, but denied knowing even the basic facts that any individual would have to have in order to do this successfully. It wouldn't make sense for his leader, this pariente individual, to send him out to conduct this sort of negotiation if he knew absolutely nothing about the subject matter on which he was supposed to negotiate. Mr. Ponce Perez's testimony was internally inconsistent. For example, he, on the one hand, admitted that he was sent out to negotiate, but denied the knowing the basic tools that he needed to negotiate. It was inconsistent with other pleadings. In his plea agreement, he admitted that he provided Ibarra, the load driver, with the nylon bag that contained the drugs, though in the safety valve hearing, he denied that he provided the bag, and it was inconsistent with the proffered testimony of other witnesses. Number one, it was inconsistent with the testimony of Mr. Ibarra, who said, yes, Ponce Perez did give me this laptop bag filled with the narcotics, and also inconsistent with the testimony of surveillance agents who noted that Ibarra, the load driver, flashed his lights at a certain critical point in the negotiations at the conclusion of this narcotics transaction, and inconsistent with the testimony of, or the proffered testimony of Ponce Perez's companion as he drove up from Arizona, Mr. Gomez, who said that the car in which they drove belonged to a friend of Mr. Ponce Perez's. It didn't belong to a friend of mine. The district court had the opportunity to see Mr. Ponce Perez, to hear this testimony, and logically made the decision, which obviously was not clearer, that Mr. Ponce Perez was not credible. The district court's finding of credibility findings under these circumstances are almost never found to be clear error, and particularly in a circumstance like this where the district court's findings are based on statements of other witnesses in the records. The district court's decision under these circumstances ought to be affirmed. If the panel has any further questions for me.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Murphy.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Nelson, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Justice. It's always difficult from the defense side of the coin to prove the negative, and that's what we're asked to do with this fifth requirement for the safety valve. And I have attempted as best I can to demonstrate on the record that my client's statement that he made in the interview, which is what is required, may not have been much, but it was the sum total of of what he knew, what he believed, and what have you. In terms of his testimony in court, his difficulty with the English language, I think, is apparent. Testimony, at least that I tried to elicit, was what he had said at his interview. We believe that clearly he made the appropriate statement. We'd ask the court to, I guess, set a more bright line for some standard when I think there is a legitimate conflict with the government's position, as there was in this case. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not, Mr. Curran?
Yes, sir. It was my honor to serve, and it's my honor to be here to argue.
Okay, thank you. We thank you very much.